Well, I'm Julie Wolf, as you may have heard, and I work at FireEye and I do malware analysis. I've also not actually, I should possibly preference that I have not actually actually practiced with this slide deck yet. If I seem like I'm surprised by the next slide, that just understand. Just a quick introduction to exploit kits, because I see a lot of news articles and blog posts that get it totally wrong. And let's say you're an entrepreneurial cyber criminal, and you can do malicious advertising, and you want to install some banking trojan, but how do you get from your sending your spam to having your fake AVs installed on millions of people's computers? It could be either malicious advertising or spam emails or search engine optimization, SQL injection attacks, iframe injections, kind of the same thing, or whatever. So phase two is an exploit kit. It gets you from, you basically get a whole bunch of people, direct them into the exploit kit, and the exploit kit then exploits them and then drops an executable file of your choice on their system, which will usually go and install whatever you want. It's out of scope for the exploit kit, basically. The kit itself doesn't actually send any spam. It doesn't do any iframe injections. And it doesn't buy malicious advertising or anything like that. It doesn't even have anything to do with the malware. It's basically just a bunch of exploits that have been wrapped up with some PHP scripts with a fancy reporting interface. Literally, that's it. It's basically when the victim is directed to the exploit kit, it'll usually hand it a copy of Plugin Detect, actually, which is a GPL program that figures out what versions of Flash and Acrobat and Java you've got installed. And then if any of them are out of date, it'll send that information back up to the exploit kit and say, oh, you're vulnerable to CVE 2010-0188, and then send you an exploit for that, which will go and then drop, exploit your copy of Acrobat and run some executable that was hosted there. So Black Hole Exploit Kit it's basically a bunch of PHP scripts with a that present a very shiny user-friendly interface to the cyber criminals who are renting it. It reports all kinds of statistical information about like which country all the victims are from and what browser browser and OS version they're running and so forth. Other than that, it's basically just a bunch of like old exploits, basically. Most of the and like literally, they're not really any different from any of the exploits, the same copies of the exploits you see everywhere else. Most of it is actually all true for all exploit kits, really. Black Hole, the first version was released in September of 2010. Since it's written in PHP, it's completely platform independent. So, because I've seen a lot of people say, who are reporting that, oh, this only runs on Linux systems or Windows or whatever. No, it's just PHP scripts. You just drop it anywhere. I've seen like a lot of FreeBSD hosting providers with like NGINX lately. So it also has a dependency on MySQL because for two things. It basically stores all the statistics about who gets exploited with what. And then it also has And then it also does IP blacklisting so that if Googlebot crawls it'll return like something inoffensive rather than end up in Google Safe Browsing. And so there's basically a big database of IP addresses as well. It's all stored in MySQL. The first version I also suspect was based on a previous exploit kit, but I haven't quite identified which one it is yet. They're all kind of very, very similar. So it can be hard to tell. So also, does anybody hear a native Russian speaker? Okay, so I'm probably going to embarrass myself for this whole talk because I kept dropping Russian words in, but I haven't actually learned to speak Russian yet. So, or rather, I'm sort of learning it. The slang term that's used for an exploit bundle or pack is, let me see if I can pronounce this right. Svyazki, is that right? I don't know. Anyway, so Google kind of doesn't translate Russian very well, if you just take like the announcements for like, oh, there's a new version of Blackwell out, here's the features, it's full of all this slang terms that you drop it into Google Translate, and it. And I'll say something like, please send me your new clothes or something. And then you actually sit down, and if you actually know like just barely enough Russian grammar and vocabulary to like actually translate it, more correctly translated is, I invite everyone to upgrade. So this particular word is translated as ligaments by Google Translate, and that's like, it's either ligaments or bundle. Those are the only two options. But it's more, the meaning is more like a group of people attached together with cords or links. It's related to apparently the word that's used for like URL links and stuff too. So it's basically, this means as a bunch of exploits stuck together is what it's what the meaning of that slang term is. So, oops. And then. The other thing was, actually, after I did a whole bunch of this research, I went and went to Google to check if, you know, what other people had said about it. And to my dismay, I discovered that everyone had already said everything there was to say about this. Well, almost everything. So just to make sure I cite every possible source, just to, you know, just to acknowledge everyone. These are a bunch of, these are some of the references. I'll add some more. Anyway, so I hope you're all taking notes on this. And so on. How many more of these are there? So anyway, it took me like a couple hours to write this. So anyway, there. So. Anyway, the thing is, this is like leaving out all of the really, really terrible fluff, reporting stuff, not reporting. There's this thing, about anything that becomes newsworthy. So in the case of like Black Hat 2.0 came out, and there was an announcement on a Russian message board by the, author and maintainer and person who runs the business. Saying, there's a new version out, it's version 2.0. And there's a Google Translate copy of it that got posted on a English blog saying, hey, there's a version 2.0 out that just came out. And here's the Google Translate of it that you can sort of understand. And then a bunch of news sites picked it up and said, oh, version 2 is out, and basically reported, basically paraphrased the blog post. And then 100 other news sites then paraphrased those news sites. And then 1,000 other news sites paraphrased those news sites. And so now if you go to Google and you try and search for anything to do with Black Hat 2.0, you end up getting 2 million hits of the exact same thing just over and over and over and over again. So the other thing that fills me with despair every single time I read a corporate blog is this. Oh, it's getting cut off on the side. So basically, there's this Mad Libs. I don't know if you're familiar with Mad Libs, where you have like a little story and there's a blank where you write in like an adjective or a noun or a location or whatever like that. Anyway, every time I look at like a news story or a blog post about some brand new spam attack that's installing malware, it's exactly the same as the previous story about a bunch of spam that was installing malware. And it's been the same story for the last several years. It's this, that, oh, we discovered a new attack. All the cyber criminals are now impersonating college mascots or something, convincing people to run attachments that or click on links that take them to this exploit kit that drops some fake AV or whatever onto their system and so forth. And then they basically usually padded that with a bunch of screen captures without explaining any of it. And then some screen captures they borrowed from some other blogs. And so when I wrote this talk, I was like, I'm going to do the exact opposite of this because I hate this stuff. So these are actually useful references. These are ones I actually used. So I actually do need to acknowledge those. The other thing is pretty much everyone is getting the information from like these three sources. And actually this one's kind of optional, but basically there's the exploit kit itself. And then there's basically everything that the author posts on a bunch of message boards in Russia. These days it's mostly exploit.in. Way back like 2 years ago when 1.0 came out, it was mostly on this website. And also you find a lot of interesting stuff turning up on Pastebin also. I'll get to that in a moment. So going down the questions of who, what, where, when, why, there are three names associated with the Black Hole Exploit Kit. Paunch is the only one that's currently active or associated with it at all. Way back 2 years ago, there was these other two guys, and they've disappeared. Nobody knows what they're doing these days, but not Black Hole. So it's very, very obvious from a perfunctory examination of the exploits that they were very clearly written by someone other than the person who wrote the exploit kit. And actually, there was a discovery I made recently that leads me to believe that they may in fact be rented by Paunch. So here's why I think that. So I discovered a public chat log that was an argument apparently between one of the exploit authors and Paunch about not getting paid for the rental of one of the exploits. But it would make sense that like in the last 12 months or so, there was like suddenly like Black Hole Exploit Kit got like every Java O day, like that day for like months. But they haven't been lately. And also, actually, a bunch of the exploits got taken out of version 2.0. And it kind of makes sense that if Paunch didn't want to pay the rent on those, so I know this is speculation. I haven't actually confirmed any of this yet. So this guy. So if you type his name to Google, you find some stuff, but not really anything terribly useful. There's a bunch of message board dumps of like these boards in particular. They're on Pastebin, and really all it tells you is that he had an account on Pastebin. So I mean on Swiss faking and dark code. So there's also a couple of chat logs and stuff like that, and also, rather than Google for it, I actually just put all the links here. So the current hit count on these is all like 22 or something. So I'm sure it's going to shoot up after this. Now, there was actually another funny one I found that's not on this list. It was it was a support conversation, a chat transcript of apparently one of the customers of the exploit kit with their hosting provider, and the hosting provider is like, hey, we've been getting all these spam reports, for your IP addresses and stuff like that, and like these guys are like, oh, I don't know why there's spam pointing at this address. And then they were like, okay, fine, whatever. And then a week later, they're like, hey, there's like all this is exploit kit stuff on your IPs, and he's like, oh, I don't know how that got there, and it's all like this. Anyway, but it'll show up if you Google for it, because at the top of the message, somebody wrote, hey, Ponch, look at this, basically in Russian. So also, if you actually, the guy actually makes himself pretty easy to contact. I assume it's a guy. Like in every single one of these announcements of like, oh, version 2.0 is out or something like that, he puts like all his contact info in here. So if you actually want to go talk to him or whatever, that's how to do it. It's a little bit fuzzy in that, but I translate it. It's basically they have. He does live technical support or customer support for the people who purchased and or rent his exploit kit. And so the official support is this contact. But if it's an emergency and you need to talk to him like on the weekend, that's his personal stuff. All right. So there's not really that much more to say about this, I guess. But when I was going through the 1 million or two blogs about Blanco exploit kit, I remember seeing several that were like, we suspect that the exploit kit originates from Russia, you know, but we're not sure. I'm like, how can you not know? Come on. Oh, so how do they do it? So a bunch of it is actually all GPL open source PHP libraries. The big ones are MaxMind GeoIP database, Plugin Detect, which is the first thing you see when you hit the landing page. And then in version 2.0, they added there's a CAPTCHA system on the admin login page, because there's a there's also like 400 icons. I have no idea where they came from, because I did some searching by MD5 hash, and there isn't an exact copy of these files anywhere. But I can't imagine that whoever made this exploit kit actually sat down and drew 417 individual icons, particularly for things like AOL, Lynx, Mosaic, OpenBSD, and BIOS, but I'm not sure where these are actually from. Well, I mean, they might be from. I have a hunch they're from. They're also like very poorly made icons, by the way. Can you see? They're all different resolutions, and this one's it's like they cut it out of like a screen cap and then like colored, like scribbled black or like alpha channel around the side, so they didn't get all the spots. So there's like little bits of little pixels of background from the original in there. Anyway, so there's a couple of really old exploit packs from like 2009. They had a whole bunch of icons in their reporting interface with the same name. So I haven't actually sat down and actually diffed the files yet. But they didn't, just on like really quick glancing, it didn't look like there was other code sharing going on with that. Plugin Detect is kind of like one of the big. Components of the exploit kit. I mean, not just Black Hole, but a bunch of other ones also. There was another one I should probably put in here. The Red Kit Siberia pack did. Cool Exploit Kit also, but Cool Exploit Kit is almost identical to Black Hole, and nobody's quite figured out why yet. Either somebody completely ripped off the black hole code, or the Ponch, whoever is changing his branding or something for his exploit kit. I don't know. So And actually, there was a bit of confusion about this, which also confused me initially also, in the, I think this was I think it was 2.0 announcement, I should have labeled it. It said that they had stopped using plugin detect, but it turns out there was just one module. It was the Java module out of plugin detect, which is basically the get Java info.jar file. So the other thing is the other big new feature in version 2, which isn't really all that different from version 1.25, was pretty much adding like this CAPTCHA system, because there's actually a tool that's created just for brute forcing the admin password on black hole exploit kits. when I was reading through the Russian, when I was translating the Russian announcement, it said Brutus, and I'm like, is that supposed to be like brute force or something? And it's like, no, there's an actual tool named that. So, why? Well, the money, basically, yeah. So, the question is, how much money? So, I reason that it should be possible to calculate, or at least estimate some upper and lower bound on just how much money Paunch is, and I think I'm pronouncing that right, is making on this business, basically. This is basically the reasoning. So this is actually still current, really. If you want to purchase this and run it on your own server, these are the prices, basically. They're actually given in US dollars, not in rubles or web money. And it's basically like $200 if you have a bunch of domains, and then you have a license for so many months. And then if you wanted to, you can actually rent a box from Paunch for like a day or a week or a month or something like that for a bit cheaper. There's a bandwidth cutoff or something. But anyway, if you look at the announcement, it's right before all the contact info, and like every single announcement for like, oh, version 1.2 is out or whatever. So it should be possible to figure out about how many licensed users there are by clustering. I'm not sure how much detail to go into about like n-dimensional vectors for clustering. Group the exploits together, kits together by like common whois or domain registrant. What type of malware they all release? Because generally the kit will all, usually a particular set of servers will always be giving up slight variation, slightly repacked copies of the same thing. So you can group a bunch of servers together that way. A lot of times they end up in the same like net block and so forth. There's a whole bunch of features you can use for grouping the actual servers together. And once you have that, you can figure out how many licenses be needed for that. So. This is the basic reasoning, but it's basically there's multiple ways of like dividing up the time versus license fees and stuff like that. It's not quite linear, but you can kind of, if you take it all into account, it should work out. I thought there was an actual slide with some actual math on it, but. Anyway, so basically, this is how you do it, and I haven't actually done it yet. And if anyone here would like to do it, feel free to go ahead. But that's pretty much, I think, how it would be possible to estimate the thing. So here's the code analysis. So I don't know why this slide is here. This is what I said at the beginning of the talk. This slide should be at the beginning. Anyway, well, it was a thing about the news that basically every news story you hear about this is basically a paraphrasing of another news story about it, because the main source for news is other news. Nobody actually looks at the code. So it's not entirely a black box. There was a very public leak of the code back in May of 2011. If you look at the actual code, it's very, very clear that it was actually exfiltrated from some server on like January 20th, 2011. It happened. The database dump was from January 20th, and then I think the rest of the files were from January 22nd. Somebody's system apparently got exploited with, and somebody dropped a C99 shell onto it, which is basically like this remote. Give me all the files on the system and dump all the databases for me, kind of a PHP script. Anyway, when this came out, everybody was speculating. Oh, it's like everybody's going to be running this now, but it wasn't actually a complete copy. For there was a bunch of files missing, and it was also all ion cubed, which was enough to, I guess, stop anyone who didn't have a decoder. I'll get to that in a moment. It's also quite obvious from like looking at the data that the machine that got exploited was that. Because it's basically written all in the database, all in the config file, and also in the license on the ion script files. Ion cube. So I'll explain ion cube in a sec. The other funny thing was that this same host is running a different exploit kit the next month. That I guess they gave up on black hole for that. So basically, IonCube it's a copy protection scheme that basically takes your PHP and turns it into something like this, which is kind of intimidating, but it's actually not all that really difficult to decode it back into this. It's generally used as a license enforcement and. License enforcement and like stopping people from just like taking the code and dropping it on a machine and modifying it and whatnot, you know, because most people look at that and they're like, anyway. So there's a bunch of decoders. If you go to Google and you look for IonCube decoder, you'll get a whole bunch of junk. But eventually, if you dig, you'll find a couple of programs that do it, and none of them actually work right. You can get maybe somewhere between 0 and 100% out of each of them, but I guess about half on average. So you need at least two of them to like get most of the code decoded. It also obfuscates a lot of the API calls for PHP. But it's, in the older versions, there's kind of a one-to-one mapping. So basically, there's a giant list of here's the obfuscated name and here's the actual function name. But in the later versions, they changed it to a different thing. So it's still not that hard to figure out that something like this actually means MD5 based on context and number of arguments. Because everything else you can see, it's just not that. I should probably put a better example up, but that's probably too hard to see. But you can see the strings are okay, most of the global variables okay, it's mostly just the function calls. The particular leaked copy was licensed for between these dates. So it was a 3-month license, so it was one of the $700 ones. And it was also licensed for use only on these 28 hosts here. So I guess I don't know if that means they paid another $200 for the multiple host license or something. But Anyway, but anyway, once you decode it, you can go through and the source code and you know see that oh well this F that's named file ID and this E is exploit ID and they're mostly kind of used for bookkeeping. Although I mean I think this one actually like selects amongst the exploits. I should have that on here, but. The other thing was that everybody's like, where does this value come from? So in the older versions, it was a truncated MD5 of the current time when a particular thread was created. A thread is sort of the basic unit for managing a particular exploit or a spam campaign or whatever like that. It's like basically if you want. It's like if you're doing some malicious advertising or some spam thing, and you only want people from Chile to actually be exploited, you essentially have a specific thread ID, which is this random-looking number. You send that out in your spam, and then basically everybody comes in the exploit kit, you know, figures out with the GIP stuff, if you know where they're coming from, and if it's from this country, then they'll send the exploits, and if not, they'll just redirect them to Google or whatever. So, in version 1.22, they or Ponch added a salt that was catenated onto the beginning of the thread ID, and then in version 2, there was also a couple of salts added. For like the admin password and stuff like that, because if you could pull the config file off, you'd basically have the hash, and then you could crack it. Because a lot of badly configured, so a lot of people who run this exploit kit don't really know how to set up a web server properly, and will like leave directory indexing turned on, and so you just go and like grab the config file, which has to be like unpacked. And then basically grab the hash and then break the admin password or something, I guess. And then the thing is, like, the point where you're reading the file off, you don't actually need the admin password anymore. So I don't know, I guess Ponch or whoever read that salting hashes was good, so add that feature. Anyway. So the actual exploits, like in version 2, didn't really change at all from the whole version 1 series. In fact, actually, there was a great deal of effort put into changing the URL name because the old ones. The old ones look like this, and is really really easy to detect. When somebody's about to be exploited, because it's always main.php and a question mark and a page equals and a bunch of hex values, and so this is changed in version 2 to use a bunch of randomly chosen dictionary words. But the thing is that the actual contents that are sent out are still identical. The first 4K of this PDF file is always the same. You can basically take the first 4,745 bytes, do an MD5 hash of them, and it'll always be the same value. There was a slight variation. So there's been a couple of minor updates, actually, and the PDF was changed. There was a length number that was changed from 42 to 123. But other than that, it was identical. But basically, they added one byte and so forth. And then also, the end of the file is always the same, too. And if you actually go in and pack the JavaScript in the middle, the only obfuscation is on like kind of the outer coding of, or outer layer of the JavaScript. In this, and so when you decode it, it's actually all the string values are still legible English, which also makes me wonder about who wrote this. There's a bunch of variable names too. There's a bunch of names like Dak wrote, I guess, and LoxWe, and I don't know what these actually mean. They don't quite mean anything in any language I've been able to track down. But there's a whole bunch of them in there, and they're always the same. It's been the same since version 1.0 of the XSplit kit. And it's the only place they appear is in this XSplit. And the PDF is also like totally malformed, but that doesn't really, Acrobat doesn't care about that, So anyway, so like I was saying, the functions basically all look like this. So it's like this is the heap spread code, which is getting chopped off on the edge here. It's basically there's the no ops, there's DAC wrap. It's a spray, and it's like literally this is just like standard like heap spray boilerplate stuff. And it's actually the thing is it doesn't even make sense I just realized looking at this that it doesn't actually make any sense in this context either because CVE 2010-0188 doesn't actually need the heap sprayed. it's done with the true type, I don't know, with the TIFF Stack Overflow, where you basically get to smack the end of your TIFF file like on top of your stack, and so you basically just build a fake stack frame there with a bunch of return-oriented programming code to point to essentially allocate a chunk of memory, copy the shellcode there, and then run it. So this is actually completely useless. And then I was actually going to draw a picture of all that stuff in detail, but I it's kind of embarrassing. I actually ran out of time because I just wrote that slide before I got up here, and this is about as far as I got. But I can tell you what the rest of this will be, and you can picture it in your imaginations. So for all the Java exploits. Throughout the whole 1.0 series, the Java files themselves tended to be very static as well. Not only were the contents always the same, but even the file names were the same. And so a lot of snort signatures for detecting would basically just look for worms.jar, because for a long time, That was the Java exploit in Black Hole. For each of the minor point versions, the names tended to change. And I think about by like summer of this year, they ended up starting to randomize those. It's actually in version 2.0. It's actually a lot more random now, and they actually unzip and change the file names of the internal classes, and then zip the thing back up again so that at least the MD5 hash is different. Digging through the code, but it looks like most of the Java stuff was essentially generated from a bunch of standalone scripts that were separate from the exploit kit, and then just bundled up and distributed along with it. The flash exploits are similar. They basically have never changed. Most of them were dropped in 2.0 also, but one of them has made a reappearance in some of the kits, and officially it's not supposed to be there, and it's uncertain whether it was added back in or if it's just certain customers like stuck it back in somehow. What was the other one? In version 2, pretty much all of the exploits, except for three, possibly four, were removed. The four that were left in were the ancient Internet Explorer 6 help file exploit, because it's apparently reliable, and a lot of people are still running IE6. The libtiff, the Adobe Acrobat libtiff one, which is CVE-2010-0188. But the older Acrobat exploits were dropped. And then the two of the recent Java deserialization exploits. Let me think. I think this covers most of them. The big news that's just recently happened is the Cool Exploit Kit and Black Hole Exploit Kit. And I'm not sure which one got it first, if they're not the same thing. There's a TrueType kernel vulnerability that was used in the Dooku attacks from last year. So I actually just gave a talk on this an hour ago, and I should be able to remember what I just said an hour ago. That is it basically around October. What was it? CVE-2011-3402 essentially started making an appearance in a couple of these exploit kits. And I think there's a third one besides Cool and Black Hole that have got it now. And it's basically all the exact same exploit code. It is literally bitwise identical. I've actually analyzed a sample of the original Dooku code from the Dooku attacks, and the code, at least the 32-bit code that's being used in the Black Hole Exploit Kit, is exactly bitwise identical to the attack code that was the exploit code that was used in the Dooku attacks. So I think there's some sort of lesson to be learned here about cyber espionage or something. There was an interesting discovery I made last night, actually, where it appears that whoever was developing the Black Hole Exploit Kit had a development server they were testing on or something. That people had noticed because there was this what looked like a font exploit that didn't work on it, and then since it didn't work, nobody really knew what it was, and everybody forgot about it. And while I was digging around for more information on this, I saw this, and I'm like, oh, I know what that is now. So if you go to the emerging threats mailing list, like from back in mid June, there's like a thread about. It's like, hey, what's this weird font thing on this particular server? It looks like a Black Hole Exploit Kit, but it's got this other exploit that doesn't work on it. If you find that thread, I'm pretty sure that was like an early test of this particular exploit. I mean, I'm 90-something percent. I don't actually have the data exactly from the site, the file names are the same, and it matches up with the current version. So let me think. What are the other things to say about this? There's not really a lot of sophistication to the kit. It's basically here's plugin detect. And then plugin detect goes and detects, and it says, "All right, there's a Acrobat version 7 running or something." And there's basically a bunch of JavaScript that's like, "All right, if Acrobat 7, then load this exploit. If Acrobat 10, then load this one or whatever. If Java version 6, go to this, go to that, and so on." And it's basically just a bunch of nested if-then statements with a bunch of go fetch this URL. If this is installed, then it's an exploit, and it's basically the same exploits from 2 years ago, unchanged. And so, pretty much if you go and read any analyses of any of these exploits, it's all exactly the same. Because the developer of the exploit kit is not actually doesn't actually touch any of the exploits. And then I don't know. So it's apparently the this particular exploit kit is very, very popular, and I'm not entirely certain, but I suspect the reasons are because it's very cheap compared to all the other exploit kits, and a lot of the other exploit kits will only take on a certain limited number of customers, whereas this one will basically sell to anybody. And let me think what else. There's a lot of I guess it gets in the news a lot. So I can speculate why it's popular, but I'm pretty sure being really cheap is probably one of the big reasons. I think it's one of the cheapest. Let me think. What else is there to say? I'm almost up to my time limit, right? So it's about time for questions. Isn't it? Okay, good. All right.
We can take.
Okay.
We can take maybe a couple of questions. So the microphone number 2.
You mentioned that the guy isn't writing the exploits himself. So did you figure out where the exploits are coming from? Are they from like Metasploit or something?
I found a chat log that appeared to be between him and one of the exploit suppliers, but I don't actually comprehend Russian quite well enough yet. I need to actually hand this to the native speaker and say, what does this actually mean? Before I actually conclude that this is like an argument, a business argument or something between the two parties or something. But there was another blog. There was who was it? One of the big security companies published a blog, basically like, oh, here, there's this new. It was like this is back like in August, I think. There was another Java O Day. I figure it was one. There's been so many that it. They basically did a side-by-side comparison of here's the released proof of concept exploit code, and then here's the black hole code, and they're like literally like line for line identical. Basically the majority of the exploits used by the majority of exploit kits are basically the public exploits. With the serial numbers filed off and then stuffed into a new box. There was a Trail of Bits did this really awesome paper a few months ago that I just saw that basically tracked the origin of many of the exploits that were used in many of the popular exploit kits, and basically like 90-something% of them all came from like public, you know, white hat researcher sources. And even though there were like 10,000 other possible exploits, there were just these 20 that were always used because those are the ones that could be copied out of Metasploit or whatever. That's not always the source, but I think it was something like, they had like little charts, but it was something like, you know, 5 exploits came from, you know, the ZDI thing, and then 50 came from these other sources, and they were like 0, they were privately developed. Like none of these exploit kits have any original exploits at all. So I don't know if that answered your question.
And you seem to have obtained at least one version of the exploit kit, and you showed all these addresses from the author. Did you actually have a chat with the author of the black hole exploit kit?
If you do a lot of Googling, you can find a lot of like a surprising amount of chat logs between a lot of these people. I don't know entirely why everybody likes posting that stuff up in public, but I don't know. I mean, I'm reading through it. There's still not a lot of information that actually seems all that incriminating. It's kind of mostly complaining about their competitors. I think there was one I saw, it was like Ponch was like griping about his competition, like pirating the exploits out of Black Hole Exploit Kit, and like there was a Russian slang term for like, what was it? It was like setting your ass on fire or something like that. I forget precisely what the English translation would be. But it was basically his competitors were burning his ass because they were stealing all of his exploits out of his kit or whatever. Oh, okay.
Do you want to greet maybe?
Oh,
the developers of the exploit? They might be looking at your video.
That possibility had occurred to me, I suppose, but I hadn't actually prepared for it.
Okay, let's thank the speaker.